got some quorum.
We got some quorum. Start the tape, I guess. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Different quorum than I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's a different combination. Okay, it's the House Judiciary Committee. It's the 11th of March, and President Representative Ellis, Parnell, Miller, Donnelly, and HDR 46. And I think we went back and worked out some more bugs in this. I think Representative Hanley identified some things, Martin identified some things. And now I think we've avoided any legal snafus that some of the people talked about what happened in Colorado. We made a change so that if for some reason somebody violated the Constitution and didn't transmit the document, the Secretary of the House of Origin would immediately prepare a duplicate, which would be submitted for the original bill. And that way nobody could, you know, the bill wouldn't die because somebody refused to transmit it on time and it would get done. And we've also made the clerk and the secretary the people who have transmitted to the governor so that they're impartial public employees. It's fraud of political manipulation. So I think we...
want a motion to adopt the committee section?
Yeah.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the motion to adopt the committee section. Did any objection? No objection, motion carried. Well, I can't think of any more problems. I mean, every time a problem comes up, we try to address it.
Chairman, I move that the committee substitute for HGR number 46 be sent on with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? There's no objection, motion carries. How about 47? HGR 47, proposed amendments to the Constitution relating to apportionment. Appointment, confirmation, removal. Currently, the Constitution says that the legislature would confirm regulatory or quasi-judicial appointments and head of a commission, in other words, commissioners. And this would simply add, and it was reworked in the State Affairs Committee quite a bit, and I do support the changes that were made by the State Affairs Committee. When a board or commission is at the head of a public corporation established by law, members shall be appointed by the governor and, when required by law, are subject to confirmation by a majority of the members of the legislature in joint session, may be removed as provided by law. So that would allow the option to the legislature if to pick and choose those words they wish to require confirmation of. They wouldn't have to do them all if they didn't feel it was necessary, but any that they wanted to exert particular control over, they could reach out and require confirmation. The other section just says that the whoever is the head of the Division of Insurance should be subject to confirmation also, which is real comparable to what other states do. Most states have a division or a department of insurance. Representative Parnett?
Mr. Chairman, how does it work on existing boards? So if they haven't gone through the process, would it apply now on the tail end if we were wanting to remove it?
It wouldn't until the legislature took some action by law to require that they be confirmed, and anybody that's already in there is in office, so they wouldn't be subject to bringing them back to reconfirm them. But the legislature could then, if the voters approve this, pass a law said, let's say the Railroad Corporation appointment would have to be confirmed, and then any new appointments would have to be confirmed.
I understand, so existing ones would be untouched.
Yeah, because they are, they have been, essentially, they're in office, yeah. And it wouldn't be impacted unless the legislature did a law extending specifically to those areas, too.
That's what I had in mind. You do the law and all of a sudden say, now we got the laws, we're going to pull somebody off this board.
Yeah.
And that's not the intent.
Well, because they only confirm appointments and they're already appointed.
But so you can take them off?
Yeah. No. It says you could be removed as provided by law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you pass the law, then you can reach into the last Railroad Corporation, pull the president right off, if the legislature so chose.
Well, you could pass a law that says it takes a 3/4 vote of legislature to remove one of these people, or that they only be removed with approval of the legislature, but you'd still have to somehow conform to that, because there's clearly an executive branch privilege to make the initial appointments subject to confirmation and subject to what limitations we put on removal. We do have a series of statutes that put limitations on removal, very specific ones we all remember from last year. All that research is kind of a hodgepodge.
Yeah, that was why I was asking.
Should, unless we go ahead and do affirmative legislation that somehow limits removal. And we've been joined by Representative Grunberg and Representative Martin.
I would rather see this say that they're subject to confirmation unless exempted by law, because this is going to allow the governor to block that basically makes this almost worthless.
Well, unless you'd be a veto override situation, you'd have to have a two-thirds vote to...
Are we in the marking stage?
Yeah, I think we are.
Do we have to, I know Ms. Cabey wanted to testify yesterday.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and take some public testimony? Ms. Cabey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Alexis Cabey. I'm an Assistant Attorney General here in Juneau, and my appearance today is on behalf of the Department of Law. Briefly, the department is concerned with the separation of powers issue, which is raised by this bill, particularly in Section 2. Briefly, separation of powers doctrine prohibits one branch of the government from encroaching upon and exercising the powers of another branch. It's a concern that this section would have the effect of infringing upon the governor's ability and authority to appoint persons to carry out the governor's philosophy and policies. And it would also appear to violate the scheme that was intended by the framers of the Alaska Constitution. As the chairman pointed out, in Article 3, Section 25 and 26 of the Constitution, it provides for a legislative confirmation of persons which the governor has appointed as department heads or as the head of a quasi-judicial or regulatory agency. The director of insurance is not either. The director of insurance is, in fact, a lower-level executive official who serves at the pleasure of the commissioner, just as I would serve at the pleasure of the attorney general. And this position is not one that serves for a term of years. Another concern that we had is that on page 2, section 2, lines 2 through 4, it discusses that if the office that regulates insurance is later set aside as a separate department of the state, then the head of that department would be appointed, confirmed, and removed as provided by this section. If that were to take place, it would seem to create a conflict because then the director of insurance, who would in fact then be, I guess, the commissioner of insurance, could be removed as provided by law, which is the language in Article 3, Section 26 of the Constitution dealing with the board members, as opposed to the treatment of department heads in Section 25, which says that they serve at the pleasure of the governor. So there's a difference in the way that person would then be treated from other department heads.
Mm-hmm. Any questions for the witness? Okay. Representative Gruber, do you have some more?
If an amendment were offered, as I've suggested, on Section 1, but first of all, let me start that. I take it that you really don't have any major problem with Section 1. Your problems are with Section 2.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. If an amendment were offered, as I had suggested, with respect to Section 1, would that change your position on Section 1?
I have to admit I wasn't able to hear your voice
let me
that
repeat
well
what I
to understand
said.
What you're proposing.
What it says now is that the heads of public corporations must be appointed by the governor, boards and commissions. And if it's required by law, they're subject to confirmation. What I've suggested is strengthening that from our point of view by making them subject to confirmation unless exempted by law. So that, see this way, if a governor wanted to block confirmation, all he or she would have to do is veto the law. And what I'd like to say is that we do confirm them unless the legislature passes a law that exempts them from the confirmation process, and the governor would sign that. If we adopted an amendment like that that was flipped it around, would that change the department's position on Section 1?
Well, let me see if I understand what you're saying. So you would propose that a constitutional amendment include a provision or legislation to exempt the person from confirmation?
Let me give you the language I'm using.
Okay.
That will help you see what I'm saying. On line 11, it would be to delete when required by, delete when required, and insert, and unless exempted. So it would state, and unless exempted by law, are subject to confirmation. Simple amendment. Would that change your position?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. It's actually line 10 then, so...
No, you're probably looking at the previous version. Are you looking at the State Affairs CS?
Yes, I am. No. Well, that could be a difference.
So it would say on line 11, appointed by the governor and, comma, unless exempted by law, comma, are subject to confirmation.
Okay, and where would that exemption occur?
I'm sorry.
Statute.
It would be a statute that would have to be passed that says that although the Alaska Railroad is governed by a board of directors, the legislature waives the power of confirmation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the concern of the department is still just, you know, very basic, that there is a separation of powers concern, and leaving an exemption that would still be at the judgment of the legislature, I think, is the inherent problem that we would have with that issue, with that doctrine.
Okay.
On his point to waiving powers of exemption, I kind of concerned we should evaluate that more and see if we may not be putting two issues in the same bill. Of course, the whole idea there was to get it out of government vetoing and outright legislation. So now we're going to get around that with the possibility of waiving the responsibilities of confirming. Right. And I'm not so sure that we would have that privilege with the Constitution, and that you're going to say only on certain boards that are a corporation that we developed. I think we need to make that more out, instead of just saying, well, we'll put a kind of a nice clause in there saying, well, we can waive it when we get in trouble. We don't want to. I don't think you want legislation that week. We waive rules all the time. You certainly don't want to waive laws and constitutional
Do you understand what I, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, you're trying to get
around the
governor's veto.
Do you understand what I'm attempting to do?
Yeah, you said you're trying to get around the governor's veto by being direct.
No. What I'm saying to you, the way it's drafted now, is it says we can, by the enactment of a statute, confirm. And I'm saying the presumption should be the opposite, and that we would confirm unless we exempted that board from this statute.
I understand that. You said at the beginning, in order to get around the governor vetoing the original bill, that you have this.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to say that you may be causing more trouble than it's worth if you don't hit the appointment directly. Anytime we go waiving laws or legislation or things like that,
you're saying that we should always confirm?
Well, if you want that confirmation, then do it. Don't say we'll waive it at our pleasure.
Well, in state affairs, there was extensive discussion at this point, and people felt that there were some public corporations or groups out there that they just weren't controversial enough to merit a legislative confirmation process. But the legislature folks felt the legislature should retain the option to do it if they felt it was important enough. But rather than the hassle of doing it when it's a controversial thing or there's never been a problem there. And so that's why it was developed this way.
We do it the routine, we have the XYZ committee, so we'll get some of those now under one. I'm only looking for a fixing game, or I'm only looking for the mining, or someone on the medical board. Mm-hmm. But most of them we get routinely, unless some legislators feel that they're actually have a guard on the state.
That's true. And I raised that point I think in state affairs, too. It just didn't seem to be a
but
big word.
You're here.
But I think there was also
too much control. We had too much control of one house or the other, on a particular body, a particular group. Maybe you're against or for a particular governor. He may be your thing or she may be your thing that year. They may not be. So, we want to get that truck at this time. I think the way you have it now, that it comes up to a joint session, and it's openly discussed in any board. If you want to get to the corporations, don't mix the issues now. You're after right now that we've got these corporations are getting extremely powerful, and that legislative perhaps should have some say-so. I would say so, and so on two of them, absolutely, because we're far behind what we expect. But at the same time, I don't want a committee to have the waiver of privilege back and forth. It should be more money to do it.
Is there another one?
I think I I understand partially what Representative Martin is saying, and basically I stopped to think about it. I mean, maybe we should, because there are some committees, some people that now come before confirmation. I mean, there's probably there's no hearings even held. I mean, the name just goes right on forward. And maybe that's what we should do, and then just instead of striking ecclesiastical exempt, just strike that whole phrase when required by law or subject, and just that they have to come before the legislature for confirmation. And probably the vast majority of them, there would be no even hearings even held on, because there are not controversy. There are times that there probably will be.
Yeah. Is there agreement?
Yeah, I would support that. I think at the very least it should be flipped around, but I would support that because otherwise, the way it is now, it's going to be very hard to pass a law to make it subject to confirmation. And the times that you want it subject to confirmation are really when there's a tension between the two branches. That's when you really need to have the thing subject. So I would support striking that. Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll take devil's advocate here, because I actually believe in the position Representative Martin, Representative Miller, and you are expounding here. But what I want to say is to let the committee know the debate that went on in state affairs. People were concerned that they just didn't want the hassle of some of these things. And there would be a way to say that, you know, we don't want to bother with this if they wanted to. There's also a political argument that some people feel that we don't want the political pressure of having to make these decisions. It's easier on the legislature just to defer that to the executive branch and we not get involved. Myself, I agree with the position that seems the committee's leaning towards here. But I wanted you to know that there are those arguments and that there's people that have expressed that.
Okay.
I don't know, if, are we finished with witness? Because if we are, I'll make an amendment.
Any other questions for the witness?
I did have another question. Are there other departments, perhaps, that we don't confirm? But I'm thinking of a Board of Education, Board of Boards. We don't.
There's nothing like hanging around about it at all.
Maybe one department.
I'm not sure how to answer that question. I'm most familiar with the issue dealing with the Director of Insurance.
We don't confirm the Board of Education, do we?
Yes, we do.
What about the chairman?
The chairman's the commissioner.
The commissioner. We don't. We confirm him. Do we have a say so on that one?
Yeah.
Not on the Commissioner of Education.
No, we don't.
Oh, the board chooses the Commissioner
right.
of Education.
Right. He has to be confirmed by the governor.
Right.
Right. So, see, I'm using an example, but I doubt that.
But that's.
But you see, that's what the Constitution says when a board or a commission is at the head, and that Board of Education is at the head, so we specifically mm-hmm. confirm that board.
Yeah.
I think it's the same with fishing
game.
Which other?
Fishing
game. Yeah. No, we confirm probably.
Because technically, he is at the head of the commission of fishing game.
Yeah.
The board, we did confirm.
Yeah.
Yes. Because
maybe the commission doesn't pick him.
No, the commission does not pick.
Yeah,
him.
Okay.
There's another right commission picks.
I guess before we go on, you know, on this concern with Section 2, you said that the director is, you seem to imply that he's like anybody else in line government under a department head, but that's not true, is it? The director of Division of Insurance has statutory powers and statutory authorizations that are different than any other department. Those rest with department heads in other places, but the director of insurance is a very unique position in the state bureaucracy.
There are some differences, just the way the present statutes are set up for Division of Insurance. For example, they have, a separate statute that just sets out regulatory powers, and their hearings do not comply with the APA, which makes a great distinction within the Department of Commerce.
And additionally, there are things that the commissioner cannot order the director to do. The director is the final authority on certain insurance issues, according to the statutes, and not the commissioner.
I'm not aware of what you're referring to.
Well, maybe if we had the director here, he could answer that. But there are specific things.
John George is here.
John George is here, but.
I was hiding.
Yeah.
Well.
Anyhow, it's a very unique position, and that's one of the reasons why I think it's important to reach down and confirm the director of the Division of Insurance, too.
I think it goes more in line with what the what you said, that so how far do you want to go currently in the division of separation of powers? And in many states, the Commissioner of Insurance is elected, and a lot of people, even dog catchers are elected. Not cat catchers, but only dog catchers. But, So, I'm not as worried about the division of powers as much as, you know, if we feel that it's a wise decision for the legislature to get involved in this, and then why not the people? I wouldn't go down that far, but it's similar to that the people elect the attorney general. We don't want to let that power out of the hands of the governor, although we always got about the AG.
I'd support that.
So, hey, I got that bill, people. All right. So, I wouldn't worry too much about separation of power. I appreciate you bringing that up. It is for us to allow the people to have that choice if they want us to decide it. I'm not so sure that people have that much more faith in us than they do the governor.
You're going to add dog catchers?
Just on the form itself, and it goes on the ballot, proposed in two separate sections.
Sure. Any question for this witness?
If she can answer it. Does something like this go on in two separate sections for ballot consideration? Does it all go on lock, stock, and barrel? Is one question.
Good question.
It needs to be separated, I believe, so the people don't think there's a link between the two.
I agree with that.
I think it should be two issues.
Well, maybe in section three we just say the amendments proposed by this resolution shall be placed on separate questions before the voters.
But remember, each bill is going to be a separate issue.
Yeah,
I had a question about that on another one, whether you can have two separate constitutional amendments in the same bill. That was on the reapportionment one, because we had all sorts of different things.
Yeah, you could. It doesn't seem to be a legal question that you could. Besides, I mean, the people are going to vote on it.
Way to kill your issue, though. I mean, leave out, if you only want to get through, leave out any potential weakness and make too good.
I think at the very least the voters should vote on them separately.
Yeah. That's fine. Any other questions for the witness? Well, thanks.
The section one's your main issue.
Well, I think section two is really important. I mean, every other. I think there's just, it's like 40-something states have either elected director of insurance or else it's confirmed because it's a department head. It's incredibly rare to have no legislative input into the director of insurance or no public election.
There's another way of dealing with the insurance one, too, and that is creating a department of insurance.
It's a little bit small for a whole.
Don't bite off too much, you end up with constitutional
convention. Well, at this point, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we strike the phrase on page 1, line 11, when required by.
Okay, any objection? Okay, hearing no objection, amendment passes.
And I think that after the governor, the comma should go,
yeah,
too.
Right.
Yeah.
And the comma and add.
No, no. Its members shall be appointed by the governor and are subject to.
Okay.
And then on section three,
okay,
we want to do some sort of conforming amendment to say that they shall be separately placed before the voters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that that's a motion?
Yes.
I'll move it.
Representative Martin?
That's okay to do here, but at the same time, I'm calling that for us to vote on it, you got two separate categories. If we're saying that the voters are voting on two separate issues, then are we as a legislator not voting on two? So each bill must be a single issue. And then here we explicitly say the two separate issues. That's what we're saying, they must be two valid questions. So we should be subjected to the same thing we're telling the people. There's two different issues that we're going through.
Well, you got two different things going on.
Sure,
there.
That's what I'm saying. You got two things.
And what I'm saying is, there's a difference between a single subject rule for a bill, and placing a proposal before the Constitution. You know, I think you could have one bill that had maybe five or six potential constitutional amendments in it. You know, that could all appear separately on the ballot, and all fit under the subject. Amendment to the Constitution. You know. If you want to set a title like that to the other body, which we wouldn't want to do. So, I mean, that would confine with the uniform rule, but you wouldn't want it placed as one block before the voters. You could, but, you know, you may want to divide it up. So the single subject rule, I don't think necessarily spills over logically into how you want to present it to the voters.
So how are you going to defend when someone in it, or any matter, say, and I hope you don't think the chief way of saying it's a procedure matter.
No,
but when somebody said we're going to separate the question.
No, well, the motion would simply be to
separate the
strike
question.
One section or
And do it as a separate bill.
Yeah, do it as a separate bill.
I would associate myself with what Representative Martin said. The thing I'm concerned about, Mr. Chairman, is that if this second section in other locations, which are unnamed, unknown, were to generate a lot of heat.
I don't think it's going to.
Okay.
The director doesn't oppose it. I mean, that I know of. I've talked to him about it. In fact, he provided me the information about how it's really typical in other states because they're department heads, and most of them are elected, you know.
The issue is the side of the procedures that I talked about. Procedures are one thing, and in the law that we have to comply with to make legislation. It has nothing to do with the issue. I'm with you on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's the separation of two issues you have in the same bill that you want to bring before the voters.
Why don't we just move to divide the question? Then we can come and represent the party.
Hey, Mr. Chairman?
Uh-huh.
I like the bill. I don't want to see anything dragged down anywhere. It's your bill, your call as far as I'm concerned.
Well, when it got to the floor, if people didn't like Section 2, it could be amended and taken out.
I'm less concerned on this floor than on the Senate floor.
Well.
Because if the administration is against Section 2, the Senate may just not deal with it.
Well, there's a Senate bill coming over, too.
There is.
They've got their own vehicle that deals with similar subjects.
I have one question.
Although there's just those specifically two public corporations, I think, the Permanent Fund and the Railroad.
But before we, and I don't mean to get away from this, I'm not doing that, but just one concern I have that nobody has raised, and that except for one board or somebody, we don't say, and may not be removed except as provided by law. It's certainly nowhere in the Constitution. Normally, this says that it basically says that you can only remove the director as provided by law, and that's whether he or she's a director or whether they're elevated to a commissioner. And all the other department heads serve at the pleasure of the governor.
Yeah.
And what this would mean that the director would not serve at the pleasure of the governor, but at the pleasure of the legislature, since it would be established by law. And that might cause additional I can see, I think personally, that a commissioner or a director generally should be removable, particularly a commissioner. And this is you're elevating this above any other director. There's no other director who's subject to confirmation. So this is almost a commissioner you're making this person. And I certainly think commissioners should be serving at the pleasure of the governor. And to hamstring them in this manner, really do have some problems with I think that this person should serve in the country if this passes.
So you just...
We already have it in boards and commissions that says they may be removed by law in the current Constitution.
Yeah.
And I think the other constitutional provisions, don't they argue that that just means the legislature can put stipulations on how the governor removes them?
I see. You're right. I stand corrected.
Okay, but where we're at now is we have this conceptual amendment before us to say in the Section 3 that the thing shall be presented to the voters separately. Is there any objection to that? Okay, without objection, then that amendment passes. So now we're back to the main bill. Again. We don't have anybody else signed up to testify. Yeah. It says that the head of each principal department shall be a single executive, unless otherwise provided by law, shall be appointed by the governor, subject to confirmation. The majority of members of the legislature in joint session shall serve at the pleasure of the governor, except as otherwise provided in this article with respect to the Secretary of State.
the heads of all principal departments shall be citizens of the United States.
All right. So.
Well, you may have a point. In that, is this is a division of principal department? I mean, that gives the constitutional authority to the governor to remove them subject to whatever restrictions the legislature passes. I guess the argument can be made if.
No, it gives him absolute authority. At the pleasure of the governor.
Right.
Yeah, it does. For principal departments.
Is this a.
Except for the Secretary of State, which doesn't exist anymore, it's not lieutenant.
But I guess, is this a principal department?
Well, it'd only be if they changed the structure of government. As it is now, it isn't.
Why,
if they ever elevated it to Department of Insurance, yeah, which would be a long ways off, then it would be the one exception to the rule of removing a department. Yeah. There could be some limits put on it.
Does the director of the Division of Insurance serve now at the pleasure of the governor, or are there, is it as provided by the
pleasure of the governor?
Commissioner. No, not the commissioner. We're talking about the director.
Pleasure.
Well, it's the pleasure of the commissioner.
Which is,
yeah,
the pleasure of the
commissioner.
But there are things in the statutes the commissioner can't order the director to do. Well, I understand.
Don't do them with God.
May we ask, can I ask, do any of you folks have any thought on whether it should be at the pleasure of the governor or the
We could say, Hayden's made a suggestion that after provided by on line 7, page 2, you could say that if they do elevate it to a department, principal department, then it'd be, the removal would be as provided by section 25
yeah,
of this article.
So moved.
So then it's just, if they do elevate it to a department head, it's the same as all the other departments.
But I guess his point still stands that it's not a department head, so that section does not apply, so that the governor, they do not serve as pleasure of the governor.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
But the way this section 28 is written, it covers in case they do elevate it to a department head. Because it could change over time. Yeah, it could change over time, so.
Yeah, I was concerned, as you, I think, was before, though, that this person should, the governor should be able to remove this person just like they can commissioners.
Well, this proposed amendment would make it so they could remove them just like commissioners if they were a commissioner. But if they're just the director, then they'd be subject to restrictions by law, which I think is good. I think we want to place some restrictions because I don't want the director doing the right thing, complying with the statute, being threatened to be fired. You know, just summarily fired without any check or balance. Because we're giving them specific duties in law. If they comply with them and get fired because of it, there should be a balance on it.
And if we put that only the legislature can remove these people?
No, what we did was say remove as provided by law. In other words, the legislature could put controls over the removal process of the director, but this amendment would make that those controls wouldn't apply if the position was elevated to a department.
Okay. I'd like to sort of divide the question. First of all, on line 7, and this will only apply if it's elevated, I would like to take Caden's amendment and say, and removed as provided by section 25 of this article. Mm-hmm. And then let's go back and talk about the rest of David's division. But first, let's deal with if it's elevated to a commissioner. I think it should be as provided by section 25 of this article. So.
Any objections?
Well, only objection in general. The governor can't elevate this to equal the other department. It's not a constitutional matter. So if I said, why even worry about the if in there? If he changes these departments to be equal, it has to be a constitutional amendment. And we can
no, you can create a department by legislation.
Mr. Chairman, I think he has a point.
Not
what he's really suggesting is that we strike the second, the final sentence, because there's really no need for that final sentence, because if it's elevated to the principal.
Well, then it would be covered. Yeah. And we can make whatever changes.
We can simply take out the final sentence.
As amended.
Yeah, well, I withdraw the amendment, I move to delete the final sentence.
Well, I wish we could talk to who drafted this. We could call him and ask him why he put that in there. Whether it's specific, you know, I remember talking to him about it, and I thought that that was a way to cover if it got changed, but if it's not necessary, we could ask him if he thinks it's not necessary, and we could see if we take it out. Let's call him.
Well, I mean, the problem arises where if there you do create a department, mm-hmm. and then the governor should have the flexibility.
And then it's covered in 25, because they are the head of the department.
Well, I guess, and then they're still called the, we still would be calling them, see, because we got to give them a name, so we designate them the director of insurance. And the director of insurance shall be appointed. So then the governor restructures it so there's no longer a director of insurance. There's no office, you know, see what I mean? So you have to have something that covers that. So then if he changes it and makes it a principal department, which he could do under the Constitution, then the head would be appointed and confirmed and removed as provided by whatever, by law or by Section 25, whichever you choose.
I think the argument would be that you would have to remove them as provided by law under Section 28 because it says the person who's head of the agency or whatever, I mean that's a generic term, or the office of government that regulates the business of insurance, so if that's elevated, then it's still regulating the business of insurance, so therefore this would take precedence over an executive order.
Yeah.
So he would be removed as provided by law, which is...
Now,
I
said, Mr. Chairman, I think that if the governor chose to create a department of insurance, then it's covered under the other articles.
No.
Why not?
Well, because you'd still have a constitutional amendment that said that the head of the Office of State Government regulates the business of insurance, so we did a director, right?
That, okay, I agree. So what there'd have to be is this would have to be a little bit redrafted at the beginning. Well,
the section in there, the thing that you just asked to have removed would take care of the problem.
Yeah.
That would take care of the problem.
That's why it's written that way.
Okay.
If he should move that way, simple executive order.
That's what we're doing. Okay. I'll keep
it
my
like
proposed amendment.
Like CNR, we develop CNR.
Okay.
Removed as provided by Section 25.
Okay, so Section 25. All in favor of saying, striking this section and adding Section 25 of this article in on line 7, page 2, raise your hand. All those opposed? Okay, so the vote was 5 to 2. It passes. Representative Martin?
Maybe we can get the little history on CNR and see how that came about, that whether or not an original major department under the Constitution, it wasn't done by legislation, it wasn't done by a simple community meeting of their own.
But DEC was done.
DEC, DEC, right, okay. And so it did go through legislation and things like that. So we have a president, if you're worried about the division of insurance becoming a major department, and perhaps we ought to analyze that before. Anyway, I'm still worried about you having two subjects. I think it's going to kill your initial thrust for a constitutional amendment. You said we're going to be confused. You know, the public like to think simple, straight to the point. It would be so confusing.
Well, it'd be simple and straightforward before him, Representative Martin. It'd be two separate questions.
You are now, but you're doing it in one bill. In that way, the governor may kill you also. Why give them an excuse?
Well, hell, they're going to oppose this anyway. They sure don't need that for an excuse to oppose this. They're going to oppose it all the way anyway.
Well, if you think he's going to veto it, why would
he? He can't veto it. It's a constitutional amendment.
Just to point out, there is one other change we're making from current situation. According to what John and Dennis back there said, for the back row, that the director now is appointed by the commissioner, and under this thing, in page 2, line 3, it will be appointed by the governor, and that is a change. And I'm going back to the thing we didn't discuss, which is whether if it remains a division, the removal should be at the pleasure of the governor, since the governor is going to do the appointment rather than the commissioner. Or removed as provided by law, which would mean that the legislature could pass a law limiting the governor's power of removal. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the issue is whether we want the legislature to be able to pass a law limiting the governor's power of removal. And I think that's a policy decision for the committee. I just wanted to raise the issue. Maybe one of the folks in the audience would have some comments on that. I don't know offhand how I feel about that.
I know how I feel. I feel I like it that way. I mean, is there any particular individual you want to call and ask that question?
No, no. It's kind of a two-edged sword. You could have somebody in there who we would like to get rid of, and so as a or everybody would like to get rid of it. If we have some legal impediment, it may be harder to get rid of the person. So, and that sort of argues in favor of the at the pleasure of the governor. On the other hand, you might want to protect the director from the governor's arbitrary removal. So the thing is a two-edged sword, and I'm not sure which edge is the more appropriate edge to use. I don't know. This is a technical position. I'd like some, maybe some testimony, or maybe somebody else has some. I'm just raising the issue.
I just have a question on it says it shall be appointed by the governor, confirmed by a majority of members, and may be removed as provided by law. Can we write a law that says if 21 people in the House and 11 in the Senate say that person's gone, they're gone?
I don't think you can.
Because we have not said that the...
Yeah. You see, you couldn't do that under the other one. You can't.
I know you can't under the...
You see, there's existing language that says removed as provided by law, and the court has said that that's... there's limits on what that means. There's still a separation of powers overall concept. So you could remove somebody by a legislative vote provided by law, but you could put restrictions on what the governor does, how the governor removes these people.
For cause?
Yeah, the for cause type things, with consent of the legislature. There's a series of different language that we've written in there, but I don't think the court's ever gone along with something more restrictive where it's actually the legislative branch removing somebody.
I think that was Bradley versus Gallagher.
Mr. Chairman, but I think this whole thing brings it around to the other philosophical side of the debate. How far should the legislature reach? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're only talking about a director here. Maybe next time we're talking about a director or something else. Are we violating that separation of power there? And I can see the argument for heads of departments, but mm-hmm. when we get to a director, I mean, maybe next time we want to talk about the director of Pioneer Benefits. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, I think, is the philosophical question that needs to be discussed also.
Sure, it's a big question, and the reason the director is being proposed here is because the director of Division of Insurance is a very unique position in the state bureaucracy, and that doesn't directly fall under the jurisdiction of the commissioner that he or she serves on. And also because it's so comparable in other state governments to entire department heads and elected positions in other states. And we don't have a lot of those in this, I don't think, of anybody that's like the director of Division of Insurance in the rest of the bureaucracy. So that, anyhow, that's the policy argument in favor of it.
Sure.
And clearly that's a question, but, you know, whether you want to go that far. Representative Martin?
Well, exactly right. You hit the point that the policy question, if you want to mix this major issue with what's in Section 1, I don't think you want that because I don't know if you can get two things to put out as two mixed birth apples, and even though it would be separate issues on the ballot, the people, the happy citizens have to be convinced too. Confusion to begin with, you may not get where you want. That you have, legislators have the power of choosing the director of insurance to oversee it. I would want a caveat that the legislators threw in at the last minute. When the last time the constitutional amendment was killed was not on the regulation of legislators overseeing regulation and passed the law, it was that little caveat that we wanted the legislative council to have powers of appropriation during the interim. How about the liberty opposed to that? So we used that as the major reason for that regulation thing, even though I believe in regulation controlled by legislators. I didn't want the council to have powers beyond the legislature on appropriation. Don't confuse the issue. If
your number one object was paragraph one, section one.
Keep it like that.
Make the other stand on its own.
I'm sorry, I just don't.
Who's that, Peter?
I'd like to revisit something that changes to this later. If you look at the memo from Jerry Lockham, it has at least 15, and now we don't have my name anymore, so 14 board corporations. And what we did on line 11, and it was my amendment, was to require that they all be subject to confirmation. From what the chairman has said, the Senate has taken another point of view and is putting in the Constitution the railroad and AHFC, and that enshrines it in the Constitution. I think that a lot of these are non-controversial, and the sports authority and stuff like that, that I would see really no need for us to be confirming. But on the other hand, I don't think putting them in the Constitution, that's too limited, because there may something else come along that we want to confirm. So I would like to rescind the action. Well, it's going to have the effect. I'm going to offer the amendment I thought of first, which is unless exempted by law, which means that the legislature can simply pass a statute and say, we don't want to confirm the sports authority. But if something happens in the legislature, to have the flexibility of repealing that and then confirming the authority if they wanted to. I don't think it should be enshrined in the Constitution which specific corporations are confirmed. And I think that on the other hand, I think the presumption is that we do confirm unless we vote not to confirm. So it's a legislative power unless we give the power up. And so at this time, Mr. Chairman, if it's agreeable, I would like on line 11 to add in, and unless exempted by law. Otherwise, we're going to be faced with a narrow title in the Senate bill.
Mr. Chairman, I will object to that. What we have now is, of course, we're not enshrining any particular corporation in the Constitution. It's broad. But if you exempt by law and say you have a problem, then you're going to have to go back through the whole process and pass the law again and bringing them back or repealing the law that exempted them in the first place from confirmation. As it works now, the governor submits the names for these different authorities. They're right across the floor. They're assigned to a committee. The committee may or may not hold a hearing upon that individual. Goes to joint session. I don't know. I think where the other way, maybe you do have a problem. Then you can go back to the legislative process and repeal the law.
So you don't mind having a bunch of cases?
I don't think it's not a big deal. I mean, the legislature may have these things we don't have even have hearings on.
Okay, I'm not going to press the issue.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree with the majority leader that when it comes to us on Alaska housing and railroad and some of these other that we want to enshrine in the Constitution, we better be now careful. Here we are trying to sell them, and now there's another group to enshrine them in the Constitution. Come on.
Yeah. And that's why I've got concerns with some of the other proposals I've seen that listed them by name.
But the thing, if you think of all that vehicle is coming over, and here the same way with this, I've got a good pie here now, and I'm going to put a new ingredient in it. So you got a good issue now, section one. Now you want to put section two in, which may stir it up a little bit.
Section two is the way the bill was originally introduced, though. There's nothing new.
I like section one, too, folks.
But it's going separate, you say.
Well, we've amended it so it'd appear separately on the ballot. Mm-hmm.
So that must actually be going to get paid.
Sure. General discussion.
Well, I just assume we move that out with individual recommendations if this is the right time to do it.
Okay. The question is whether to move the bill with individual recommendations.
That's fine.
Okay. Is there any objection?
Yeah.
Okay. Those in favor?
Give me a chance to talk.
Those opposed? Okay.
for the bill moves with individual recommendations, resolution moves with individual recommendations, as amended.
Take one out of the other.
You can't create two bills on the floor.
Is anybody here on 183? Talk about 183?
I can get David, he's just waiting.
Oh, okay. But there's like nobody waiting, and I just, okay. How about 305, is anybody with? And there's just, anybody want to testify on 305? Okay. Okay, well, I guess I'll take up 305. This is, the existing mandatory auto insurance act has a sunset provision, and this would eliminate the sunset provision and make the bill permanent. It's just that clear, whether we want to have a permanent mandatory auto insurance law or not.
Do you have anybody that had any experience with it?
You need to comment.
Well, I think everybody in the room's had experience with the bill since the law sunsetting last time, by the kind of chaos it caused, and it had a very bad impact on the number of insured drivers in the state. I think it went down some 2%. We've never recaptured the folks that we had before after that gap in the law. All the public opinion surveys I've seen give it an 80 to 82% approval rate that people want there to be a mandatory law that people that drive should have auto insurance. Representative Martin.
People want mandatory insurance, and I gluttonously gave into it. I haven't had insurance for about 15 years. Now I pay $400 and just hand it out. I always thought it would be better to have my own insurance plan, which I did, and it was cheaper. But now I pay it to, send it on the test for that objection. I don't think it's helped any. That's what the problem is that can the department let us know? Is it being enforced? Is it helping any?
Sure. Would you like to come forward?
That's my major thing. We can make it mandatory, but has it helped the situation? Do we have just as many uninsured drivers on the road, but people complaining just as much?
Ma'am, maybe you just identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bonita Hensley. I'm the Chief of Drive Services for the Division Motor Vehicle. Prior to any mandatory insurance law, 1981, 82, and 83, Alaska had approximately 20 to 21% of all drivers were uninsured. After the original legislative law went into effect in 85, it dropped to some 8.8%. That the law was repealed or sunset in December 31st of 88. And the present law that we're working under went into effect in the last of June, 89. Since then, we have held right at 11.4%. It's averaging 11.4% of the, all individuals who are involved in accidents are uninsured. That's certainly a lot better than the 20% and 21% that was back in 1981, 82, and 83. My division, you know, approximately anywhere from, oh, 1990, there were a total of 25,618 drivers involved in motor vehicle accidents. Out of those 25,000, 3,066 individuals were suspended as a result of their driver's license being suspended as a result of not having insurance. The other individuals did have insurance. And so those 3,000, it doesn't necessarily mean that they were the ones at fault for the damage. So the law has
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. Is there a procedure, I heard it was about a week years ago, and Department of Motor Vehicle, when people come in for their licenses, how do we double check that? It seems to me that I send it in, I do it by mail, show them I had insurance, but is that regularly assessed when a person in for a new license, or a new license?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin. When an individual comes in for their vehicle tax every year, or their tax, they have to certify that they have the minimum requirements under the law. If they do not have that and they are involved in a motor vehicle accident resulting in damage to either party of in excess of $500, then their license is suspended. And in order to get that license back, then they have to submit the proof
register their vehicle here, they are required to certify that they have insurance for their vehicle under the laws.
Any other questions? Thanks for your testimony. It's kind of, Representative Grunberg?
I move the bill for reading by title.
Is there any objection? Any objection? Motion carries. Representative Finkelstein, House Bill 183.
How many other bills have you seen in your lengthy history here? It's nothing but repealers.
Nothing but repealers?
Yeah, that's all it does, repeal a bunch of laws.
Right, right. Representative Finkelstein, you want to address House Bill 183?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill is the Fair Campaign Practices Code. Most of the members have seen it in one form or another over the years. The idea is to establish a code that all candidates are given the opportunity to agree to. There's no penalty for failing to agree to it, but if you do agree to it, or if you don't agree to it, it's indicated as such on the voter's pamphlet, which is distributed to voters prior to the election. There's also no penalty for violating the code. The reason I've introduced this and believe it's a good idea is I think part of the process of getting candidates to be honest in campaigns and try to reduce dishonest campaign practices is just a matter of public awareness, trying to draw attention to it. And I think that while there's nothing mandatory in this code, it provides candidates with a way to call their opponent on what they're up to. If your opponents agree to a set of principles and they take some action that's contrary to them, instead of just complaining my opponent's being dishonest or unfair or unethical, you'd actually have something to point to that my opponent agreed to this code and they've violated in such a way. That's basically the idea behind the code. There's a number of states that have adopted it. We talked directly with someone from Montana last year, and they felt that it had helped them in dealing with sort of dishonest campaigning. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Barton?
We had this before, but I see the sentence in here again. I will abide to the manner exemplifying the highest standards and traditions of American systems of free elections. You go into our history of elections. Why? Well, I hope we don't return to that.
Does that include the first election to Lyndon Johnson, the U.S. Senate?
Well, not only that, I'm thinking about the Lincoln, I'm talking about Hardin, I'm talking about the bad guy they call that, beating.
Mayor Daley?
His illegitimate sons. It wasn't true at all, would they? Hayes, maybe.
Oh, wait. Taft?
You're breaking line 18.
But I can't go by American tradition.
Do you know that they had to build in a special bathtub?
Representative Martin's in violation of line 18, Mr. Chairman, I object.
Standards and traditions.
This sentence, Mr. Chairman, was added. The sentence that Representative Martin refers to was added by the State Affairs Committee in a rewrite. It doesn't say the American, the actual practice of free election in America. It says the traditions of the American system. I think it's talking more about the system than actually what's happened. The system and the concept behind it, of course, is giving people a free choice, an educated choice.
The conceptual system.
Right. Motherhood and apple pie, and I shall never have a bad thought of Max.
I love it. And you heard it here first. I think he's doing something. He's got something going on down there.
Well, there's a little bit hypocritical saying something like
play
that.
Play of words here.
I mean, we certainly
whispering campaigns. I love that one.
Why don't we just say the highest values of the American system of free elections? Because there's certainly values that imply those good standards and traditions, even if we haven't necessarily pursued or followed them over 200 years of history. What do you think?
I like that.
What do people think?
I move that we change that.
Where
are you? Line 9, page 2. The highest values of the American system.
And that's what you're getting at. You're getting at what ideally we like to think of our system as providing, right? Not exercised it. Okay, Representative Grunberg's moved to strike standards and traditions and insert values. Is anybody opposed to that? Okay, hearing no opposition, motion carries. Representative Grunberg?
Yeah, just on that phrase, too, I'd like to have the period after elections.
Let's see.
Because whether or not you have a choice between the candidates is a matter of philosophy, not ethics. So I moved it to delete all after elections.
Yeah, so as to present the voters with a clear choice, do you want to delete that?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing no objection, motion carries. Any other suggestion?
You know, you sit behind me on the floor and you whisper a lot. I know it's whispering campaigns are prohibited.
I just noticed that. I was whispering at him when I heard about Dave. I heard
Dave was a
twirl. You know, usually when I'm about to stand up and make a motion, I hear a whisper.
Yeah, I'm good.
That's why they put him there.
I think so.
Could have some handicapped implications here, too. Is there any other suggestions?
Yes.
Representative Hanley, could you say something?
Line 14, Mr. Chairman.
Line 14.
Page 2. Maybe we can put knowingly. I know this isn't something.
Yeah.
If you put, I will not use campaign material of any sort that misrepresents, distorts, or otherwise falsifies the facts. It's one of those things again where if you print something in good faith that you've been given and it turns out you've distorted the facts. I mean, if at the time you did it you thought that they were true, then technically you violated this section. Although, so I think the knowingly.
Should that also be on line 15?
I didn't know.
No, well, I knowingly use malicious.
Well, obviously, you know it's malicious if it's, yeah. Well, see. I
will
not
use. And how about the unfounded? You want to be consistent.
Yeah, whatever needed to be made consistent.
Is there any objection to inserting the word knowingly between not and used on line 14?
I don't say knowingly allowed to be used, because there may be some campaign material used that you don't know of. But,
use or allow to be used.
Yeah.
I will not knowingly use or allow to be used.
Well, you can do that, although on line 23 that's covered. It says I will not attempt to air charges against mail.
We're on a roll here.
I think it should be use or allow to be used.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, do you want to talk on this specific amendment?
The only problem you get into with or allowed to be used is you almost have to stick it everywhere, and we tried to do that with at the line that Representative Hanley referred to, line 23 and 24, where you won't attempt to air your charges through other individual groups, which is what it would involve in order to do that. It just gets to be, we don't want the code to be sort of hard to understand because it's got so much wording.
I would agree.
Okay, so we're back to will not knowingly use campaign materials. Is there any objection to that? Okay, so knowingly is now in there. Representative Parnell.
On line 12.
Line 12.
I wonder if we could put a period after the word communications and just delete the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you feel, David?
That's fine, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there any objection to that?
I hate those guys.
There's no objection? Then, okay, we've deleted about my opponent or personal life.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, this line we should on line 15, I was going to insert, nor will I knowingly use it in light of what Mark said a minute ago. But I don't know what
the nature of the question is. Nor will I knowingly.
Malice implies intent.
But unfounded accusations, doesn't it?
Well, they're unfounded. You shouldn't use them.
Yeah.
Well,
we only use founded accusations.
Yeah, but we have up above said the same kind. I think it's important that we keep the two lines consistent, at least with respect, not with respect to malice, but that does imply intent.
Nor will I use malicious or knowingly unfounded accusations.
Yeah, let's put the knowingly there. I want to put the knowingly before I'm here.
Okay, is there any objection to that?
Mr. Chairman, it seems like you have to have knowingly as an adverb adjacent to the verb. I don't think you can put it before the adjective.
No, an adverb can modify an adjective. It can modify a verb or an adjective or another adverb.
When this is the House and this committee, we can consider those issues.
That's grammatically possible.
We just gotta keep in mind the reading level of the average parent.
Oh, God, we're in deep trouble.
Nor will I use malicious or knowingly unfounded accusations.
I think that's right.
Yeah, there's the article and there's the preposition.
Disgusting.
I had a group, in seventh and eighth grade, my English teacher taught my father. She said, "What's your father maxims?"
That was, yeah,
same transfer.
Okay, is there any objection to putting the word knowingly after the word or there in line 15? Okay, done. Any more suggestions?
Well, I got a catch with forgetting a thing. Should be a basic rule that I will see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil in my opponent. Hear no evil, you know, that's what we're saying.
And about
the whole idea of campaigns is that if you, whether you like it or not, at times you have to bring out information that may be somewhat defaming of the individual because he's a crook. You know, he's a communist, whatever.
Communist.
But you know, you didn't have these feelings with the opposition. You know, I think my opposition is an outright socialist. And if you don't be careful, folks, it's gone. I'm not a socialist. I'm a right-wing radical.
Might even be a homo sapien.
Well, remember, again, another word I had there. Here we said the Human Rights Commission. I'm not sure of all the classifications we have here, but. You know, we're not allowed to talk to people about people that are gay or lesbian. Is that what we're saying?
That's what we were saying.
Well, yeah. You'd actually have to go to AS 1880, and my recollection is that's not one of the categories we protect right now. We probably ought to, but we don't.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any guarantee of protection over sexual preference.
This would prohibit someone talking about, I don't know if it's true or not, but what they did with Gary Hart, well, that's true to be true, but who's the guy now? Clinton. He's a womanizer.
I don't think womanizing is one of the human rights
categories.
Originally,
it
was
said as a
personal life of the opponent. Personally, and I don't think it was our intent to allow personal life kinds of statements. We just felt that, you know, you didn't have to set it forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the intent is that unless it relates to their fitness to serve.
Well, that's what I mean. If people say, if some woman brought up a charge, as she did in the Clinton case, whatever she did, and your opponent's not allowed to say, hey, look, you better look into this guy's personal life. My personal life is none of your business, sir. I'm here to serve you. My public life's going to be completely different from my personal life.
Mr. Chairman, there isn't anything, Representative Martin, there isn't anything in here that prohibits you from taking on personal life of your opponent. The sentence we took out, part of previously was, I will conduct my campaign without use of personal vilification, character definition, whispering campaigns, libel, slander, or false communications. We took out the words about personal life. You could certainly bring up founded accusations about the personal life of your opponent. I don't personally believe even that's particularly ethical, but there's nothing in here that deals with it.
Mm-hmm.
The other section you're referring to, AS 1880, those are the human rights classifications in our law. None of them has to do with womanizing. They have to do with civil rights, classifications based on age, based on
religion.
Race, based on religion. It's the basic human rights categories. And so an appeal to prejudice would be an appeal to prejudice based on one of those categories. There isn't any intent here to try to get to the personal life. It's just prejudice, appeals to prejudice.
We need this guy brought out on the record, so we say that if I don't like the guy, that because of this sexual activity, I'm going to say it.
The council, the committee also reminds us that mental handicap is one of those things that,
mm-hmm.
that can't be used against any
of us. Maybe I'll go for that one. My opponents have been using that regularly. My level of intelligence.
Well, we made some amendments here, but we want to be
this is so unbelievable. Going to be so perfect in code. If there's anyone that can bring out on my opponents the things I could have bought out in a number of cases, in which I didn't have enough left on choice. But and it's your choice and his choice and anyone else. But
I just think we're gonna get such a ball of wax here, a toy baby, so to speak, that anyone that thinks anyone whispered or even thought of something wrong or whatever, you go to coffee, you listen on the phone all the time and people will tell you about this guy or that guy. You say a few questions or make a few statements and whatever. And,
Representative Hammond? Yeah, the last section 25 through 27 concerns me a little bit, in that I think it, the public repudiation of somebody that's out there doing something. Obviously, in 23 and 24, it says, I will not air my charges through someone else. So you haven't insinuated that that person, I mean, I'm not supposed to do that, but. If somebody totally separate from me, somebody out in the, you know, crazies in elections go out and say something about somebody, now if they say it about my opponent, then I've got to go out and publicly say that that person shouldn't be saying that about my opponent. Is that what I've got to go say? Or it's not true about my opponent, so I then have to defend my opponent? I mean, that's my concern. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it was covered already, and I understand what you're trying to get at, is that a party goes out there and does the lying for you, but that you're not supposed to allow that under the section right above. So the public repudiation, I guess, is... So then I say, does that mean I repudiate support deriving from or any group that supports?
Send the money back?
So I guess if he doesn't support me, then I don't have to... or she saying nasty things about my opponent, I don't have to go out and say anything. Does that mean anything?
Mr. Chairman, that sentence may not be perfectly written, and you certainly could get rid of it without harming the attempt to get it. What we're getting at is the sentence above it, where you're not going to attempt to air charges through someone else to avoid the purpose of this code.
Right.
The following sentence is attempting to say, if that occurs, you're going to, you know, repudiate, basically separate yourself from any involvement in that, and, you know, point out that this is not something that I'm involved with, or repudiate the support from. But I don't, you know, I see your point, I don't see any harm in taking it out either.
I mean, they don't necessarily come out and say they support you, even though they're criticizing another person, so now I guess I don't have to repudiate that. But that
it's just trying to get people to
Right.
It's essentially trying to meet the intent of the sentence before it and show that this is not my campaign, this is not my involvement, I'm, you know, repudiating what they're doing. But I don't think it's necessary.
So did you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to take that.
Okay, is there any objection?
525 to 27.
Yeah, right. Insofar as...
I don't hear any objections, so is that... Okay, so it's been deleted. Representative
Martin? When line 29 and 30, perhaps we should have someone from the Division of Election. That's my page in that pamphlet. I paid $50 for it, whatever it charged me, and I'll say about myself what I'm going to say. I put a picture of when you came in high school rather than the grave. So I don't know why I had to pay for someone else to say something about me. So we're going to get in a problem there. I don't think that... suppose a person chose not to, and some have candidates, not to participate in this.
They could have a $25 bonus for this, and if you didn't want to pay the $25, you just give them $50 and leave it up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think they're blind, yeah. Number one, I have a real philosophical problem with this here. You run out of vote campaigns, I run out of vote campaigns. I know some of them question the things they've said about their opponent, very much so. But at the same time, that's the give and take of an election. We're not going to make it so pure by this, to say the least.
Why not try?
Huh?
Why not try?
Well, the try is being a falsehood, and for those who, in my mind, have been guilty of it, and now waving a red flag of innocence.
So that's the reason not to try. I think that is as out of order, cast aspersions on these people's support this bill.
But I don't think this is going to help. You're going to fall up so much in legitimate people trying to speak, and we who have the experience of campaigning can ball up a new candidate like mayor with this one.
Ball up? I don't know what ball up is.
Yeah, make sure they're in that ball so they ain't got a fair chance to do the campaigning and do the
ball up
thing. Yeah, ball up.
What's the third ball up?
Well, that's pretty, it's better than surrounding yourself with holiness with this.
Okay. Representative Grimberg?
Just one thing at the end. I don't know if this would be a letter of intent or something, but with respect to Section 2, the only thing that I would say on that is that that shouldn't count against your word.
Right. Mr. Chairman, it doesn't. There's plenty of room on the page, and it essentially goes below the space you get. If you look at the things, there's plenty of space at the bottom to print that.
And you
have all your words and all your space for your biography and your picture.
So, okay, that just as long as we're sure that
that's the case.
I'm not sure if the words I'm
already right enough.
Poor public.
How many amendments you got on this now?
With individual recommendations.
If you want to mail letter, Pat, or are you going to have a discussion? You're going to have a cleanup for us as a member.
Yeah. I can walk through them for you.
We understand.
Well, but I mean, we're going to have one for us.
I mean, they're really easy to understand. We deleted. First of all, there's a motion before us to move the bill with individual recommendations. And so we're having discussion on the motion.
As amended.
Right. We deleted lines 25 through 27.
Mm-hmm.
We deleted on page 2, line 9, the word standard and traditions,
mm-hmm.
and inserted the word values.
Mm-hmm.
We put a period after elections on line 9 and deleted so as to present the voters with a clear choice. We put a period after the word communications on line 12 and deleted about my opponent or the personal life of my opponent. Line 14, between the words not and use, we put knowingly, may not knowingly use. And then we also inserted the word knowingly on line 15 after the word or before the word unfounded. And that's what I've got.
That's it.
Okay.
We deleted line 25.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, is there any objection to the motion to move the bill with individual recommendations?
As
amended.
Yeah. State Affairs version?
Yeah.
Okay, there is an objection to moving the bill. Those in favor of moving the bill? Okay. All opposed, one. Motion carries. Next thing that's coming for us then is SJR 76.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Okay.
You are young. Oh, okay.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Busily working away.
Didn't know you were there. Behave myself.
This is a pretty straightforward proposal that would essentially preserve a lot of the guarantees that are in statute by placing them as rights the victims of crime would have in the Constitution. Parallels the, I believe, the Minnesota Constitution. It's the Michigan Constitution. Actually, there's a copy of it in members' packets. And it does have a caveat that these, you know, that the legislature would provide for these. The legislature would provide by law for enforcement of this section, which we essentially have done. I don't think there's anything here that we don't already require by law, but the reason I wanted to introduce it was just to raise it to a constitutional level, because clearly the rights of the criminals are constitutional rights. I think these are minimal rights for victims, and they ought to be considered on the same level as the rights of the criminal.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry.
I signed on as a co-sponsor of this just this morning. I was reading that. I hadn't read it before.
We saw this in the past, and I'm trying to think of the questions that I had. Why I signed them out with no recommendation.
For the record, Joan Knuckles, staff representative Donnelly. Through the chair, Representative Hanley, I believe your main concern was how constitutional law will actually be affected when you're raising present statute to a constitutional level and you really don't have any
set case law to address the principle. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, actually, no, I expect it. Like on the right to restitution, does that mean the state's, because it's constitutional, we're going to have to provide for that now? I mean, does it rise to that level where we have to actually appropriate money, even though there's, I mean, concerns like that that I wasn't sure about, that I agree with the right to restitution, but whether if it goes to a constitutional level, does that mean that we need a budgetary item now that's general fund money to put in there? And
well, first of all, the specific provision on restitution only provides for an assessment against convicted defendants, people who are convicted of the crime, so it wouldn't be the state's responsibility. Second, it uses the word may, so it creates something that empowers the state to do this, or the legislature to do this if it so wishes to provide that.
Which may?
Page 2, line 6, the legislature may provide for an assessment against convicted defendants to pay for crime victims' rights. It's simply an optional means of financing it, and I think there are, I think, existing constitutional restraints against us doing that to a certain degree, and the court can certainly interpret things to do that. And I think it ought to be an option that's available to the legislature to be able to assess people who commit the crimes for victims' compensation.
You should end doing that with the public department.
Right. But this would clearly make that legal, our authority to do that, or to exercise other types of penalties or assessments that would do that, where there may be a question that may be outside our constitutional authority to do now. Sam Parnell.
Would the sponsor be open to indicating that it would read that line 2, page 2, the right to restitution by assessment?
The right to restitution from the defendant.
From the defendant?
That'd be fine. Yeah.
That would be good.
Yeah. If there's any questions. Mm-hmm.
The defendant? I mean, would you only
not yet convicted individual?
Well, from the convicted defendant. That's okay. Because that's the terminology we use other parts of the bill. That'd be fine. From the convicted defendant.
But if they don't have any money?
Well, they work in jail.
Permanent fine.
Clean weeds along the last
road. We're working on the last
road
right now.
Yeah. We got that fund guy, the state got that fund guy. We were paying so many millions of dollars to beat that case and involved, and then called him and watched him, and then we found out he had no assets. Had a guilty scheme.
Chairman?
Yeah, Ms. Otto?
I wonder if by adding the language on page 2, line 2, from a convicted defendant, whether or not you'd be limiting a victim's right to sue civilly to situations where somebody had been convicted.
That might be a problem. You know, as it is now, it provides the legislature would enact these rights or control these rights by statute, but it would raise them to something that's a fundamental level, and then the legislature would interpret it and adopt it through action. Maybe we're safer just saying right to restitution.
I don't know that it's, you know, I think it may very well be a good idea to say the right to restitution from the defendant to address the concerns raised by Representative Hanley, but I don't know that it's a good idea to say a convicted defendant, particularly when you're giving the legislature the authority to spell out when and under what circumstances you can get restitution. So I think it might be better to say from the defendant and leave it at that.
Which other state has done this?
Michigan. There's a copy of it.
Alone?
Mm-hmm. There's
been Chairman. Other states that have done it too. It's just a copy of it. Michigan.
Matter of fact, there's a national congressional thing.
There is? Mm-hmm. There's a group?
I have trouble with stuff like this in the Constitution.
Sure. Rooms in hand?
I had a question on page 1, line 5, the right to attend trial and all other court proceedings the accused has the right to attend.
That's like saying you have all the rights you have.
Well, I don't know. Is there any circumstance where the accused? I mean, I don't know enough about the circumstances.
Yeah.
Are there circumstances at all where the accused or the person who's been the victim should not be?
Yeah, I think there are for...
Yeah, you might have child.
Right. Yeah, there's times where the courtroom is closed off and to protect other interests.
But that wouldn't be allowed under the...
No, it would be because that's why it's written the way it is.
You could have a situation also where, let me give you an example in reverse. When they had the Chicago 7, the defendants were so obstreperous that they had to be bound and stuff so that they, you know, they wouldn't disrupt the proceeding. You could have a victim that's so out of control that they'd be prohibited from the court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened. Remember the actual killing in
the Dahmer case?
Yeah, Wisconsin, where the lady just literally went on the stand and rushed at him.
Well, it's the same thing. You know, the accused has the right to be there, but it's not an absolute right, is it? Because if they were particularly problematic like that, or if they were, they have a right to speak, but if they don't shut up, the court has the ability to shut them up.
Remember that.
So that, you know, it's like any other constitutional right. We have a right to freedom of speech, but it's limited also.
If a tree fell in
the forest. Well, that's my only question. I'm not familiar enough with the law to understand it. But when we go to a constitutional level of guaranteeing the right to attend all the proceedings that the accused has the right to attend, even though we have enforcement powers, I don't know enough to know that if there is a circumstance where those enforcement powers wouldn't be enough. I mean, we may all agree that the victim should not attend or should not be able to attend it because we've given them the right, they have to. And I don't know if there's a case like that. And I need to
but that's privilege, you don't always have to turn your lights.
No, I know that. That's not a problem. It's where they want one that we would think they might not. For their own protection or for others, they should not be that.
On line 14, where Representative Hanley's addressing that, does the word that belong between proceedings and the?
Yeah. It, Mark, by Mark, yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
That, the accused, has.
Right, it simplifies it a bit. It almost reads now that the accused has a right to attend.
Hmm.
It is a little confusing to us.
Okay. Well, unless there's other discussion, why don't I hold the bill over for a while and take a look at this line 2 on page 2. Do something to clarify there.
I think on line 14, it should be the right to attend the trial.
Why don't we consider a little bit the ramifications of page 2, line 8?
All right.